Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's program, Latest on Litigation Against the Immigration Ban. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question and answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touchtone phone. You may withdraw yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Please note this call may be recorded. I'll be standing by if you should need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Jesse Bliss. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Nikki. Good day, everyone. My name is Jesse Bliss. I have the privilege of being the director of litigation at the American Immigration Lawyers Association. I also have the pleasure today to have a fabulous panel that is going to discuss the presidential proclamations, specifically the June proclamation that expanded upon the immigrant ban announced in April and renewed it and then expanded it to also non-immigrant ban for most workers. Okay, I want to give you a brief rundown of who's going to be speaking today. I'm so honored, grateful, and happy that we have some of our individual plaintiffs and some plaintiff representatives who will be joining us today. I want to run through the agenda, and then I want to really talk about, just to give you an overview of what this proclamation is and how our litigation is going to respond to it. So after I finish talking today, we're going to be, you're going to hear from Mr. Nazif Alam, one of our individual plaintiffs who has a compelling story. I don't need to say any more about that. You'll hear from him when I'm finished. Then you're going to hear from Ms. Ajima Golden Kouadu, who is joining us from the Ivory Coast. Incredible story, a great woman. You'll hear from her. After that, you're going to be hearing from one of our co-counsel, Ms. Nadia Dahab. I cannot say enough positive things about her. She's going to really get into the nitty-gritty pieces of the litigation. Following Ms. Dahab, we'll hear from Dr. Linda Alvarez, an SEIU Committee of Interns Residents Secretary Treasurer. She's going to describe how this has impacted their organization. And then we'll hear from Ms. Gita Gorgi, an immigration attorney who represents SHPCO Transport, one of our company plaintiffs. And then we are going to hear from Ms. Karen Tumlin, the founder and director of the Justice Action Center, who is, if nothing else, the Energizer Bunny that keeps us going and going for our litigation team. And then we'll have some Q&A. So, you know, I want to start out, and again, I can't thank you all enough for coming here and spending an hour of your time to listen to what we're doing. You know, when this proclamation was issued in June, I don't think it was much of a surprise for anyone, at least for co-counsel. But I nicknamed it Banzilla just because it was so expansive, so broad, that it reminded me of, you know, Godzilla coming to take over Japan. Unfortunately, you know, unlike Godzilla, this monster is real. And the audacious attempts by the executive branch to suspend the entry and deny the issuance of visas to so many categories is really breathtaking. And what we're doing is challenging that audaciousness with our complaint that is going to be filed tomorrow. We have assembled a group of plaintiffs who are strong enough to take this on, and we have the legal arguments to back us up. And, you know, this is really an unprecedented attempt by the executive branch to really, really, I cannot say it any other way, to screw a number of people, really to really devastate their families and their businesses. One example that you'll hear from, you know, diversity visa applicants will lose the opportunity of a lifetime if they are subject to this proclamation on September 30th. Congress, you know, intended for these diversity visa applicants to come here. And really, the total destruction of that opportunity is really heartbreaking. But that's enough from me. I want to introduce you to Mr. Nazif Alam, and he is going to tell his story. Nazif?
Thank you, Jesse. Good afternoon. My name is Nazif Alam, and I am a legal permanent resident of the United States and an employee in the food service distribution industry in New York. During the peak of COVID-19, my job was designated essential as I was responsible for ensuring that groceries and critical household supplies were available in all the convenience stores in my area. And while many sheltered at home, I traveled all throughout the city with diligence and perseverance because I knew that if I did not do my job right, if I did not protect this critical supply chain, there would be real life consequences and people would be unable to put food on their tables. But despite my fight against COVID-19 in the front lines, this administration decided to punish me by issuing an executive order that would prohibit me from uniting with my wife. It has been 2 years, nearly 2 years, since I filed an immigration petition to bring my wife to the United States. All our civil and financial documents had already been accepted, and my wife was waiting for her final interview at the U.S. consulate. But our case was put on hold when the administration issued a proclamation in April suspending legal immigration, citing that people like my wife would somehow take away jobs from Americans. Nothing could be further from the truth in our case. Not too long ago, my wife was accepted at a master's program at Cornell University starting this fall. Under normal circumstances, her case would have been complete before the fall, and she would have been in the U.S., not competing for jobs, but studying in school for the next 18 months. It is difficult for any individual to get into such an esteemed institute, and more so for a woman from a third world country. But one tweet and one signature upended our whole world and shattered our American dream. Even putting the lack of humanity and compassion aside, this order will severely restrict my wife's post-graduation earning potential and her contribution to the economy of this nation as she stands to lose her studentship at Cornell. And despite all the honest effort and hard work that my family has put in, this administration is pushing us towards the brink of an abyss. Today, my family and thousands of other families like mine have been needlessly affected by the executive order as the administration has decided to keep spouses away from one another and children away from their parent in the middle of a worldwide pandemic. To those unaffected by this order, our fight may look like another mere lawsuit, but to us, this is a fight for our most basic God-given right. The right to be with our families. I have already missed my first anniversary with my wife because of the immigration proceedings. But now, because of this inhuman and inconsiderate proclamation, we may not even be able to see each other on our second anniversary. Therefore, it is my deepest and most sincere hope that justice and humanity prevail and the honest and hardworking permanent residents of this great nation are able to reunite with their families. Thank you.
You know, Nazif, I really couldn't have said that any better. I wish I could. You are incredibly gracious, and thank you for joining us and allowing us to represent you. I next want to turn it over to Ms. Ajima Golden Kwadu. Golden, are you there?
Yes, I'm there. Good day, everyone. Hello?
Good day. Yes, go ahead, Golden. You're on. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I am Ijoma Golden Kwadu from Cote d'Ivoire. I am married and mother of two lovely daughters. My first daughter is 3 years old, and the second is 9 months old. I am an industrial chemist by profession, but presently working in a five-star hotel as a receptionist. To show you how my husband is self-employed. He is into selling of land. Also, he is into the realization of land, digital printing work, making advertising gadgets also. In fact, since our selection for the diversity lottery, we dreamt to immigrate to the United States to have a better standard of life, more especially for my children. Here in Cote d'Ivoire, we always live in fear because of the political instability. I was 4 months pregnant when I knew I was selected. I was so happy because I saw a bright future for my unborn baby. To this end, we stopped all Cote d'Ivoire, which was that of opening of a restaurant, the purchasing of a transport vehicle, and many others. Immediately, we used a part of our savings for the constitution of the document requested by the GDC visa program to the medical visit was carried out for all the members of the family, which was done on March 4, 2020. As the principal applicant, I could no longer sleep, eat, or even work normally. Following this, I made professional mistakes at work, which cost me much. I was depressed at 30 times. I had to drop this professional training because I knew I was leaving to the United States and that I could continue my study once on the territory. My husband refused certain markets since he was not going to be able to finish in time because of the program. He was financially affected because he refused the long-term contract offered to him. Furthermore, we deprived ourselves of vacation in order to better prepare ourselves for our departure to the United States. Opportunities to buy physical goods presented themselves to us. But knowing very well that we were immigrating to the United States, we had to refuse them all. Our dreams came to a sudden end. For us, life was stopped since we lost in moral and financial health. Without forgetting the children, we would have such a good future. Their education, the negative impact it had on our social life. Being cut off of our dream that way, it was so wrong and unhuman. Even as I'm telling this story, I feel like crying again. If we are not given this at this stage, I will look like it has to start all over again. I'm sorry. I'm going to take off. More time. It's going to take us more time, more effort to be financially stable since we did not carry out our project of investment. Again, we had a 6-year lease contract starting from 2016 to 2022 with our ex-landlord. In the contract, we mentioned that we do not have to pay rent until 2022. But since the development procedure requires financial resources, we sold our lease contract to increase our savings. Now, paying rent. Today, continuously, we are faced with several financial burdens. In view of this situation, and that makes us not happy. It will take us a long time to rebuild what the DV lottery suspension does lose. Denying us this immigration is denying us a better future, especially for our children. Since 1990, this program was created. Why now? Why us? This is so unfair. The long-term impact it will have on my family is that certainly will no longer believe or even dream again to avoid what happened to repeat itself. In summary, we lost all. Thank you. That is my story. I finished.
Golden, I just want to let you know while I have you here in front of everyone, I just want to let you know that when I said you were my sister earlier, I meant it. You're part of my family and part of our litigation team's family and part of this case's family. I want you to rest easy and let you know that we're going to fight as hard as we can for you. And one of those that will be fighting is the supremely talented Nadia Dahab from the Innovation Law Lab, co-counsel on our case. She's going to let y'all learn about what we're doing. Nadia?
Thank you, Jesse, and thank you, Golden and Nazif, for sharing those such compelling stories and for joining us today. I want to first acknowledge what is apparent from the stories that we just heard, and that is that this ban that the president has issued has had and will continue to have an enormous impact on people and on families in the United States and around the world. Families have been separated for the rest of the year and perhaps indefinitely. Children and parents, grandparents, brothers, sisters, who seek only to reunify will be unable to do so because the president is willing to tear these families apart to further his xenophobic agenda and shut down all immigration to the United States. Individuals seeking to come to the United States on diversity visas who seek a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity and safety and family unity here have been banned, again, perhaps indefinitely, shattering their dreams of coming to the United States, stories like you just heard this morning. This is all, of course, contrary to our federal immigration law's longstanding core purposes of family reunification, protecting individuals in need of humanitarian relief, promoting diversity, and welcoming immigrants with skills that are useful to and will help grow the U.S. economy. And it is on that basis that we are challenging this proclamation. And let me be clear, this proclamation is part of a comprehensive ban on immigration that is part of the administration's goal of shutting down, like I said, all immigration to the United States entirely. As I'm sure many of you know, the administration just recently took significant steps to virtually eliminate refugee and asylee admissions to the United States. And the proclamation we're challenging here, in addition to this ban on family-based and diversity-based immigrants, the president has also banned a significant percentage of non-immigrant visa applicants, those who seek to come to the United States because they have skills that are useful to the U.S. economy and will help it grow and, in this case, recover in challenging times. As the stories of the individuals you've just heard and the ones you're about to hear show, this ban is not about protecting the U.S. labor market or encouraging economic growth. It simply does not serve the purposes that the administration suggests and will, in fact, will only endanger the U.S. economy. As the stories of several other plaintiffs will show, you'll hear them now, and as my colleague Karen Tumlin will later talk about. So with that, I will hand it back to Jesse, who will introduce a few other plaintiffs in our lawsuit who could talk more about the ways the proclamation endangers their business and the economy more broadly.
Thank you much. We're going to turn it over quickly to Dr. Linda Alvarez, the Secretary Treasurer of the SEIU Committee of Interns in Residence. Dr. Alvarez?
Thank you so much, Jesse. And thank you, too. I want to take a moment to thank Golden and Nassif for their very candid and moving stories. All of this, you know, should be bringing about the change that we need to see. And with that, established in 1957, CIR-SEIU is the nation's largest union for interns, residents, and fellows, representing over 17,000 physicians across the country. We are the frontline providers within our specialties. Throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, the resident physicians in this country have demonstrated how essential their work is as frontline providers to their communities and health systems. Residents throughout the pandemic are working over 80-hour weeks, have put in hours of extended in-house hospital calls, and have sacrificed their scheduled personal and vacation time to meet the needs of their given hospital system. Most importantly, the nation's residents, along with all frontline providers, put the needs of their patients and communities first over their own personal safety. Although CIR represents residents all over the country, we have large concentrations of residents in New York, California, Massachusetts, and Florida, states that have been particularly hard hit by the COVID-19 virus to date. Residents are on the front lines of the pandemic, especially in Florida and California, both of which are setting record numbers of positive cases in the U.S. daily. CIR-SEIU is here today because we are the national voice for resident physicians, whether those residents are our union members or not, and whether the residents have arrived in this country or are overcoming this administration's barriers to get to the U.S. and begin caring for patients. Over 250 incoming resident physicians have contacted CIR for help overcoming the obstacles presented by the proclamation since June 22nd. These obstacles range from consulates who will not grant emergency visa appointments to consulates that are conducting H-1B visa interviews, but then placing visa applicants in administrative review, claiming that without guidance from the State Department, they cannot review visa applications. This has been going on since the proclamation was issued. Even though healthcare workers who will be treating COVID patients in hospital settings are explicitly exempt from the order. My union, the Committee of Interns and Residents, CIR, is participating in this lawsuit because someone needs to speak for the resident physicians who rightfully earned a residency spot in the U.S., who followed the rules when applying for a visa, and who want to come to the U.S. to provide patient care to our communities, but who are now being arbitrarily blocked by the federal government from entering the country. CIR is also a plaintiff because of the negative impact the proclamation is having on our current union members, who are covering the duties of their colleagues stuck abroad. The longer the delays, the less sustainable these extra responsibilities are for already overworked resident physicians. This situation is particularly acute due to the COVID-19 pandemic and the strained resources of many hospitals around the U.S. who are treating COVID patients. The president said he is worried about the country's economic recovery. The only way we will be able to rebuild our economy is if we get COVID under control. By barring physicians from coming to the U.S. to help care for COVID patients, the federal government is actually creating an impediment to our economic recovery. Approximately 25 to 30% of physicians in this country are foreign-born. We rely heavily on these talented doctors to provide health care, particularly in inner-city and safety net hospitals, and blocking them from coming to the United States will harm patient care both now and in the long run. Of the over 250 resident physicians who have not been able to enter the U.S. to start their medical duties, they are slated to work at hospitals in the following states, many of which are experiencing or have experienced serious spikes in rates of COVID transmission. These states include Florida, Texas, California, Alabama, Connecticut, Washington, D.C., Georgia, Illinois, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and Wisconsin, to name a few. These highly qualified physicians have been chosen through a rigorous process to work at over 60 hospitals nationwide, and their services are desperately needed now more so than ever. They are signing on to risk their lives to treat patients at U.S. hospitals and to care for our communities here in the U.S. The last thing the Trump administration should be doing is denying their entry. Thank you all.
That was unbelievable. The story and how well spoken you are, Doctor. That was fabulous. Thank you. I want to turn it over next to an attorney, Gita Gorgi, who represents Shipco Transport. Gita?
Thank you, Jesse. Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here today. I'm an attorney in New York, and I've been practicing immigration law for almost 20 years. My client, Shipco Transport, is a multinational shipping company with over 2,000 employees around the world, and their global headquarters are here in New Jersey. And they have over 400 employees across 29 offices in the U.S., 21 offices in the U.S., excuse me. Shipco is one of the world's leading non-vessel operating common carriers and has a reputation for paving the way for innovation and advancement within its industry. Its success in the past 30-plus years has been due to its highly trained and qualified workforce, whom it invests greatly in. It leads the way in their employee and management training programs, both here and abroad. Shipco and its international affiliates have always had a policy of rotating their employees, managers, and executives within their global offices, which leads not only to more skilled workforce that have a better understanding of the regions that their divisions work for, but they also help in the advancement of the employees' careers as they go on to work for either Shipco or one of their competitors. It's a niche industry with a small employee pool, and Shipco has created successful programs for training new local and international employees, and they're always looking for ways to invest and give back to their local communities. For instance, about 10 years ago, SHPCO moved their Northeast Regional Office to a designated urban enterprise zone in Elizabeth, New Jersey. This really helps stimulate the economy, not only through investment, but also through job creation. And they have nearly 100 employees in that office right now. Also, they've partnered with the local school board and set up a summer internship program for high school students to introduce them to the industry. One of their programs is a J-1 trainee program. This is crucial not only for SHPCO's success, but also for other shipping companies as well. They've hosted nearly 200 agents and management trainees over the past 10 years. Many of their J-1s go on to become managers and executives at other successful companies around the world. They become leaders in their industry. Their L1 program allows them to bring over managers and executives to the U.S. with unique proprietary knowledge that is not available within the U.S. workforce. It also allows them to create more U.S. jobs by developing new divisions and functions within the U.S. and then expanding. With the help of these programs, SHPCO's ensured its continued success, especially during these unprecedented times. In fact, when New York and New Jersey locked down due to the pandemic, SHPCO's talented IT division worked quickly and diligently to allow all of its employees around the whole U.S. to work remotely without any reduction to its workforce. If the J, L, and H programs are not available, it'll adversely impact not only SHPCO's business, but numerous other businesses in and outside their industry. Businesses such as trucking companies, retailers, wholesalers, and even consumers. SHPCO and other companies like it keep the supply chain intact for essential household and food products, PPEs, hazardous materials, and other items that are so crucial to the survival of our economies and our nation. This ban will tie their hands and ultimately impact local economies and communities, resulting in even higher unemployment than we have now.
That was so good, Gita. Thank you so much. Next, we're going to turn it over to Ms. Karen Tumlin. Karen?
Thank you so much, Jesse. I'm Karen Tumlin, the founder and director of the Justice Action Center, and I'm one of the litigators in this new lawsuit. And I really hope that what everyone has heard listening to each one of our plaintiffs this morning is what's really, I think, the most striking about this latest immigration ban from the president, which is its absolutely breathtaking scope. And what do I mean by that? Well, even the White House has estimated that over 500,000 immigrants will be blocked under the ban. The research group, the Cato Institute, estimates that the impact could be as high as 545,000 people. And those aren't abstract numbers. As you've heard today, every one of those people has a story. Every one of them has a family that they're separated from. Every one of them has an employer that is desperate to have their talents put to use. And I know that listening to our plaintiffs today, quite frankly, I hear in them myself, right? I hear the stories of my family, of my friends, and of my neighbors. And the simple fact is that what the president has done is that he has tried to write over nearly every single facet of our immigration laws with his presidential pen. He's halted, potentially and definitely, the ability of diversity visa winners to enter the U.S. He's keeping families separated like Nazif after years of waiting to obtain green cards to be together. And he's hindering our businesses from getting on their feet and navigating the economic recession that has been produced by a worldwide pandemic. But here's the real truth. We have a president and not a king. So he doesn't actually have the legal ability that he wants to take a hatchet to the carefully considered immigration laws that have been passed by Congress to do certain things, to promote our values of keeping families together, our values of having a prosperous economy, our values of diversifying our immigration system. So when I think about it, that's why I'm so proud and all of us on the litigation team are so proud to join with these plaintiffs who represent absolute breathtaking diversity to take the president's noxious ban to court. So if we're certain of anything during this pandemic, it's that as a nation, we're more aware than I think we've ever been before about what ties us together and that our success is interdependent. And so for that reason, we reject the president's effort to use this pandemic as an effort to tear us apart and to pit immigrants against non-immigrant communities in the United States. We reject this president's attempt to toss out our nation's immigration laws and replace them with his xenophobic notion of who belongs. We reject the idea that our immigration system is a source of weakness during this pandemic. We know, and we know it based on the stories of our own families and our friends. We know that our immigration system is a source of our strength and our resiliency as a nation. We reject the notion that families like Nazif's should be separated by this lawless ban. We reject the idea that the president can, through this ban, limit the diversity of our nation by blocking families like Golden's from coming to the United States. We reject the idea that the president's ban can cause staffing shortages in our nation's hospital at a time when our medical professionals are working around the clock just to keep us safe and deliver care. And we reject the idea that the president's ban will cause financial ruin to our businesses and job creators like Shipco precisely at the time when they're fighting to economically survive a pandemic. And we don't have any intention of sitting on our hands about it. That is why tomorrow we are taking the president's ban to court. What we're doing tomorrow is we're filing an amended complaint in the Federal District Court of the District of Columbia challenging the president's June immigration ban. That lawsuit is being filed on the behalf of a class of individuals and entities, many of whom you've heard from today, who are adversely harmed by the ban. So the next legal steps are going to be that we're going to ask the court for relief or a court order for these named plaintiffs and others like them so that they are not deprived of their right to immigrate to the United States or forced to endure separation from their families or driven out of business due to this unlawful ban. Now, make no mistake, the president's latest ban is nothing more than a Trojan horse. But we're no dummies, and the president cannot trick us into using COVID as an excuse to re-inject racism and xenophobia into our immigration laws. This ban is nothing more than a gussied-up attempt to achieve the racist immigration reforms President Trump was unable to get through Congress, and it is his effort to literally end immigration as we know it in the United States. That's why we're proud to stand with these plaintiffs and go back into court. I turn it back over to you, Jesse.
Awesome, Karen. Thank you. Well said. I will now ask Nikki to know that we're ready for a Q&A. So any reporters with questions, please announce yourself and direct your question.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone phone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone phone. And we will pause a moment to allow questions to queue. Once again, it is star and one on your touchtone phone if you would like to ask a question. I have no questions at this time.
Okay, well, maybe we can make some final remarks and let these fine reporters and our fine plaintiffs and representatives get on with the rest of their day. I'll just say to everyone on the call that as an individual, it's incredibly humbling to participate in this type of case that is going to affect so many lives. And it's a it's a tremendous honor, and I'm grateful. And I'm grateful to have the opportunity to share that story with everyone on this call today. Nadia, final words?
Yeah, I guess I would echo Jesse's comment, right? These individuals that you've heard from today are, you know, have such compelling stories. The president's and the administration's actions here are, like we've said several times over, breathtaking in scope and in impact on human lives. And so we are going to fight as hard as we can against the president's attack on our immigrant communities around the world. Karen?
Yeah, the only thing that I would add is, so the lawsuit that we are filing tomorrow is the first of its kind. And it's the first of its kind in that there are a couple of other lawsuits that have been filed challenging pieces of this June proclamation, but none of them take on the entire Banzilla monster, as Jesse said. And that's really important because it shows you the scope of the harms and the evils of this proclamation that you've heard from our plaintiffs today. And as somebody who has been practicing law for several decades, I will say it is incredibly unusual to have large employers standing shoulder to shoulder with unions and also with directly impacted individuals from all walks of life to join together in a lawsuit. And that is because we share a common goal of really maintaining the integrity of our immigration system and pushing back against the evils of this ban. So it is my great pleasure to be part of this team with each of you.
Awesome. I'll just say one final thing, that I did not thank our communications teams, and they deserve a huge round of applause for making this happen, including you, Nikki. Thank you for being there for us today. I will close, and you can take it from there, okay?
This does conclude today's conference, and have a wonderful day.